Session number 10013, reel number 3.
Mr. Alf Howes, reel 3. What were your duties as ship's bugler?
Well, as far as I saw, a troop ship in those days was just like a barracks. There was a CO's office, there was a RSM's office, and there was different offices. And every day at a certain time, I had to report the RSM's office. There was a knock at his door, so I'm reporting, son, that's right. And then him and I would go and report the CO, the ship's commanding officer. And by that time, every man on the troop ship was lined up with his life jacket. With his life jacket on, wasn't it? It was like a life belt thing. I lined up with them on, and then we used to go around every inch of the troop ship, and then to let the people know in the next part we're coming, I used to go. That's all I did. Went down, sounded a long note, and because they would know, he's coming. And just going to the ship's hospital, and the kitchens, all the way around. That was every day. That was about as much as I did as ship's bugler. And you were there in case, if fire broke out in the ship, or if anything happened in the ship, you were there to sound the alarms and all that kind of thing. But it was a cushy number. That's all it entailed, ship's bugler.
Anything you remember about the trip?
Just it was enjoyable, and I always remember going back on the trip. There was an old soldier, he'd been in India for years, and he was going back off leave back to India. And I always remember him saying to us, "Don't go to bed tonight, lads." He said, "We enter in the Suez Canal." He said, "It's a sight you'll never forget." And man, he was right. We went through the Suez Canal. It was a wonderful sight. Old Bill Luck, I called him, Bill Luck. That and the lad dropping overboard, as much as I remember.
Where did you land?
I landed in Bombay, and then with a 5-day journey from Bombay on the train to Barrackpore, which is about 7 across India, one side of the other.
What would that give you, your first impressions of India, really, landing at Bombay and then across? Mm-hmm. What did you think of it, the people and the climate and the scenery?
You didn't see very much. All you saw was the dock side. You didn't see much of the Bombay city as such. You didn't see much of you didn't see much of the city. You just saw the docks, and the railway sidings were on the docks, and you went straight into the train and where you went to the Barrackpore.
What do you think of the climate? That's your first, I know you've been coming.
Oh, well, it sort of affected, you could feel the heat straight away, but by that time you'd gone into your khaki, prepared for it, you get your topi on and your khaki drill, KD, what they called it, KD, stands for khaki drill, and you were in the shorts. And sure, that's all it was.
So you didn't find it too oppressive?
No, not really. As a matter of fact, I think at the time, if I remember right, I think it was the time of the year when the sun was down a little bit. It wasn't so much heat in the sun, about September time, November time, I think it was.
What was the train journey like?
Very interesting. You went across miles, and lovely scenery. India's a lovely country, People don't realise how lovely, what a nice country it is. I thought it was great. It was great travelling through India. We stopped different places. Meals was ready for us at different stations. We got off the train. Now meals are ready. It was also same really stuffs.
What was it?
Sloppy soup and sloppy stew. And you never got a cooked meal. It was stew every time you were stopped, it was for your breakfast, I think.
British cooks or the locals?
No, there's natives employed by the British Army out there, They're on contract to the British Army, and they used to have it ready for you. And then on the train itself, you had tea wallers coming down, and they were going, 4 o'clock in the morning, tea waller. You could even... Starting, there was the first carriage, all the Indian servants and tea wallers and whatever. They'd start in the top. You could hear them starting all the way along the trail. They said, "Shut up, you're noisy. Can't get to sleep."
You had plenty of room in your compartment.
Well, it was an ordinary third class compartment. Yeah, they were like, there was a three seater there and a three seater here, and there was a bunk above and a bunk above that, and the three seat that they had made, there were six men that were to a compartment, and that's how you slept on the troops in the long corridor, nothing train to train. And it was very interesting. It was they go across jungles, through jungles and all sorts. And it was quite a very interesting journey and quite an experience. Which was one of the that was part of the thing I wanted to go in to get that kind of experience, see a bit of the world, you know. And we got to Barrackpore and we were met there by the banner bugles of the 2nd Battalion. We played from Barrackpore station into the camp, and all the old soldiers were there to see the draftees coming in, you know. And you'd say, "Oh, this I've seen it for years," you know, because you knew a lot of them. And that's where it went. And they were in Barrackpore. Am I jumping? I'm not jumping.
You're right. When you got to Barrackpore, did you get? Well, I know you didn't, but you weren't to get your wish to go into a rifle company. Did you find that out straight away?
Didn't get the chance. When we landed in the big parade ground, and there was a bugle major who said, "Right, these men, Kitson, Howes, Sinclair, Addison, Ray, Crawford, over here." And well, we knew then. And form up, two lines, and right turn, quick march, down the bugle section. And from that on, we were in the bugles. There was seven of us, that's my company. It was Sinclair, Kitson, Howes, Ray, Addison, Crawford, and Turnbull. Seven of us.
You must have been very upset.
I was, but I knew I couldn't. I had to make the best of it, you know. I was.
Is this when you gave up your?
Yeah, get any idea of ever getting to the? Because it took a long time to make a good bugler, Peter. You know, it did make a good bugler. Just a matter of a few days, weeks. It took a long time, and the Durham Light never reaped the benefit of my experience in the Terriers, and also the. And also in the Boys' Brigade, bugler.
What was the cantonment of the barracks like at Barrackpore?
It was very good, a very good layout. Beautiful barrack rooms, and big and spacious. The roads were good, the sanitation was good. Unless you had any amount of wogs, do that kind of work. Tea wallers and dobies and sweepers and whatever. They were all pretty, very good.
Did you have your own servant, or would you?
No. When you got to be a corporal, you got your boot boy. What's called a boot boy, and you had to pay him so much a week. And then I think we'd pay him about 6 months a week.
How did you get on with the Dobie Wallers?
Very well. Oh, they were very well. They're very well. Because they'd been with the battalion since from being kids. Wherever the battalion went in, they followed them. All the tea wallers and the sweepers and all that, they followed them right throughout the battalion service in India. And whenever they went, they went.
You treated them well.
Part, they were definitely part of the battalion. Yes, you treat them very well. You get the odd one that got your black, But when I got my staff, if ever I had anybody, I used to check them and say, "Cut it out." I mean, that's just as good as you are, as you said to someone. We're going very well.
So what was the routine like at Barrackpore? How did it differ from in Catherine?
It didn't very very much, except that it was instilled in you when you're out there to keep yourself as fit as possible. Go into all kinds of sports. And as in India, as in England, the first period was gyms. PT, physical training, gyms. And then you didn't get as many parades in India as you did in England, because it got too, at times it got too hot. And then when the hot climate did descend upon you, you were sent up in the hills. Not everybody, something, you took your turn. If you went one year, you didn't go the next.
And which was the hill station?
Leebong, particularly up in the Himalayas.
Near Darjeeling?
Darjeeling was the main station, yes. Darjeeling. there. That was a great experience. Anyway, I remember I told you about the experience up there when they shot the fanatics, these left fanatics.
Can you tell us that story on the tape? Because that was
it was while we're up in Ribon, we used to have these race meetings. It was just a racing around a sand track around on the outside of a football field. It was, when I say a race meeting, don't class it with Ascot or Goodwin or anything like that, but there's anything but. It was just a sand course around, on the outside of a football field. And there was a big stand, and this particular day Sir John Anderson, the governor of Bengal, he came to the races, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this, I don't know what he was, a native, he out with his knife, and he, oh no, a gun, and he tried to shoot, and he didn't actually, but it missed him. But the Gurkhas who were on duty come up with a, what do they call them, knives again, the Gurkhas carry, there's a knife, oh yes, and got him straight away, and that was,
he was killed.
Yes, he killed him, yes. And that was the same John Anderson who invented during the Anderson shelters, Anderson air raid shelters. You'll have heard about them, you know, air raid. Everybody had them in the back gardens during the last war. That was the man. That was one of the main incidents that happened while we were there. We did that chance. We chance to go up and see Mount Everest. We've seen that from a long way off, of course. And we used to have some good times out there.
What sort of were your recreations any different? You had to keep fit. Did you do more sport?
Well, there was a lot of hill climbing because you were active in the hills, and football was the main thing, and hockey. Football and hockey were the two main things. And going out, you know, I might say, well, I'd fancy a bit cross country run, Jimmy, Jack, Walter. Yeah, well, I would ride around. We'd have a run around, maybe what, a 6, 7, 8 mile run on the hills, you know. Well, I was a fitness fanatic. I was one of the loads of them in the army. We were fitness fanatics. I think that's why I'm as fit as I am today. You know, so I'm benefiting from my early days in the army. But I mean, I consider myself my age, 74. I'm pretty good condition for my age. Although that's hurt myself. You're only as good as you feel, aren't you?
Did you have athletics teams or sports?
Oh yes, days? Yes. That's yes. We used to have company. We used to have battalion sports days, each company competing against the other, you know. And then you have brigade sports, different battalions against one another. That was at Mau. Yeah, it's called Mau, where there was all the athletics that you see on here. Hammer throwing, discus, 440, relays and all that.
What did you do?
I did cross country and 880 relay.
What were your other recreations? Were you allowed out to mix, you know, with the civilian population?
Oh, we used to go and play native teams football and hockey. Oh yes, we used to love to play. They used to love to play the English, like the English troops at any particular sport. And it was a great day out for you, you know. You used to lay a meal on fire and sometimes drink. Particularly if you're going in if you were invited to a place where there's a lot of half chats, you know, half English and half people that lived out there,
Anglo Indians,
that's the word. That was great.
Did you see a lot of the Anglo Indians?
Oh yes, you see, yes. It's a great lot of them.
How about the English, so to speak, the British civilian population? Would you mix at all with any of them?
No, you never. Where we were in Barrackpore, there was very few. The only thing was our own money quarters. You know, the NCO's wives, private wives, the money quarters. They were about the only ones you saw. But when he went to the city, when he went to Bombay, when he went to Calcutta, we used to go to Calcutta about once a month. It was 17 miles from Barrackpore to Calcutta. We used to get a train or a taxi. And we used to save up to go once a month. You know, take things very easy with your money until you could afford to go have a weekend. It used to be great. But then again, we used to go on detachment to Calcutta, so we had a place called Fort William. We're in Fort William in 1936 when the Quetta earthquake happened. Well, that was an experience. We were there for a tattoo that was being held in Calcutta, and we did our practice stint in the morning, and it was always siesta in the afternoon. We did it on the afternoon, and we were laid on just palliasses on the floor and tents, big tents, where marquees there were. And this particular day, they were all some laid down and talking, and all of a sudden the ground shook. Somebody, what the devil is that? And again, oh, what is it? And we dashed outside, and there was a great big chimney stack in Fort William. You see it going like that. And it only a matter of seconds. And what, the next day, oh, God, the papers. I have photos of before and after. Quetta before and Quetta after the earthquake. I still have some upstairs. That was an experience. It was one of the biggest earthquakes India's ever experienced, I think. The Quetta earthquake, 1936.
What did you do when you were on your local leave in Calcutta?
We didn't get leave. We just went for the day, just for the day out, night out. And there were some nice places, some nice cinemas, pictures, and nice going for a nice cafe. You know, nice going to cafe. You know, Salvation Army was they did as well they had a beautiful place in Darjeeling, but they had one in Calcutta as well. Just go on there and get a cheap meal, a good cheap meal, you know. And what else did we do in Calcutta?
Was there much drinking going on at that time?
No, you couldn't afford it, Peter. Not among the privates, you couldn't afford a drink. No.
What about the women's situation? Did that affect people?
What do you mean, sex? Are you talking about sex? The lad used to find somewhere to go for sex, but there was a lot of VD about, you know. But when we went to, I'm jumping a long way now, when we went to Bombay, we had regimental brothels. They were organised by the military.
But they weren't in Calcutta?
I don't think there's any in Calcutta, no. There wasn't in Calcutta. Or Isha. No, just the only place I know where it was regimental brothels was in Bombay, and there was quite a lot of them. And we went to Khartoum in the Sudan, where there was a regimental brothel that was shared with us in the Black Watch, 1st Battalion of the Black Watch Regiment. But Calcutta was a beautiful city. You could go along the parks, the nice parks, and there was a nice along the docks. And a night out in Calcutta was just spent by going to a cinema or around the shops, or going for a meal and back home.
Did you get bored at all in India? You know.
No, I never got bored. No, I suppose some did, but when I was giving you this interview, I'm speaking for myself. I never got bored. I loved every minute of army life. There wasn't any time in my army life where I was, say, I was bored or homesick or anything like that. Only once, when I was 21, I was in Bombay, and the lad called a townie of mine. His nickname was called Ernie Arston, but he always got Shufty, because he used to shuffle it when he was playing football with his feet. Like, he got nicknamed Shufty. Well, Shufty had been out there 6 years. He's entitled to a free leave, and he was going home. And while he was on leave, I was 21. I knew I would be celebrating my 21st birthday while he was. And I got a little bit homesick then. And he brought the cake back. My mother had made a cake. He went to see my mother when he was, she'd made this birthday cake with 21 candles. Well, I wish you'd seen that cake when I got it. He'd put it in his kit bag, and all the candles were squashed in the kit. You never see such a sight in all your life. I think that was about the only time. I really enjoyed it, and I would do it all over again. I'd volunteer for India, I'd do it all over again.
Now, in 1934, you were made a Lance Corporal.
Yes, Nibong, yes.
What did that entail? Any extra responsibilities, or what did it entail?
Well, the first year, you're picked to go on this training cadre. To train as a future NCO, and you either failed or you passed. Well, I passed. Me and Jimmy Ray, we were two buglers. We both got Lance Corporals. And then when we came back on the plains, that's back to Barrackpore, we were from then on, we were Lance Corporals in the bugle section. We had so many men to see that everything was done right, you know. Show an example to the rest of the buglers, and if there's any trouble, you reported them, and the threat you respected you as their senior, you might say. And yes, a bit of responsibility.
In 1935, you went on a PT course at Poona.
PT at Poona,
where you came into contact with the Warwickshire Regiment and therefore, presumably, Montgomery.
Yes.
So tell me about that.
Well, there was about 10 of us. Oh, I don't know, maybe 6, 7, I don't know, but say 6 of us. We picked up on this PT course in Poona. And we knew we would be a report to the Warwickshire Regiment as attached to the Warwickshire Regiment. But in them days, when you went on anything, PT course or a rifle course or any education, and whatever regiment it was attached to, we always went in front of the CO the next day to, you know, make yourself known to them. And they said, well, welcome, private, so the corporal, whatever it might be. And hope you have a nice stay with us and enjoy your stay with the battalion. And in this particular case, the Warwickshire, it was Field Marshal Montgomery when he was a colonel of the Warwickshire Regiment. And we had this PT course.
What impression did he make on you? I mean, obviously, there's no reason you should remember him, but...
Well, he seemed a very friendly kind of chap, as far as I can remember, such a long time ago. He gave us a very nice, warm reception, and, as I say, I hope we'd enjoy our stay with the... And if we needed any help, we'd be frank to go to him or any other member of his battalion to go for help, and we were quite welcome.
Did any of the Warwickshires say anything about him, or did he have a reputation then for anything?
Oh, Montgomery? No, I can't remember, Peter, whether he did not name there. I think he was just an ordinary colonel like everybody else was. I mean, he made his name in the war, didn't he? You know, in the last war.
Right, so was it at this time you became the CO's bugler, or was that later when you went on to Bombay?
No, I was CO's bugler at Barrackpore.
How did that come about?
We got to Barrackpore about back end of 1933, and in 1934 the CO's bugler was held every year, and was it just a waste of time, certain buglers going in for it. It was only the certain ones who went in for it because they knew it didn't have a chance. And I've told you the story about Brown being CO's bugler.
He was a friend of yours?
Yes. And this friendly argument got around that Brown will beat ours and ours will beat Brown. You know, that's the way it went on. Like making a football match, having it, it'll beat Liverpool, another one, Liverpool. And anyway, the outcome was I won it.
What test were you given? How was it decided?
Well, it was on your turnout, appearance, smartness, everything. And you blow the bugle, of course, how you blow it. And the judges were the bugle major. They couldn't see you. They didn't know you. We had a number. And they didn't know, I mean, who was blowing the bugle. All it was number 2 or number 3 or number 5, whatever it might be. And it was the bandmaster, the bugle major, and I think they got somebody from another regiment, I'm not sure. Anyway, we had about 3 or 4 calls, long calls there were. And I won it the next for 3 years after that.
And what job was that? What did you have to do as CO's bugler?
Every night of the week, I had to go out to the officer's mess and blow officer's dinner call every night of the week. It tied you down to that. If you wanted to go out, you had to get somebody to go and do it, a good bugle to do it for you. Well, Kitson always used to do it for me if I wanted to go out any time. And it was Kitson that eventually won it off me. I let him win it because I don't know whether I should say this or not. I blew a couple of calls and purpose mucked them, you know, so he would win it. I've done it for 3 years. I was getting fed sick of the job, to be quite honest.
What were you sick of? Was it just this? Just tying down?
Yes, you were tied too much. And then there was some good parts of it. I remember there was a big parade, or a massive parade in. Where was it? I was in Bombay. Yes, Bombay. Massive parade, and I was the marker bugler. I had to go all the bugle calls to get different regiments in line, all that. That was a. You know, you felt a bit of a. Now we did a tattoo.
in Bombay Dockyard, the night of Lola's Postenry Valley. You know, they only wanted one bugler for it. And again, that's Bugle March and that radio programme. But you know, you got extra, a lot of extra. And I did it for 3 years, and I thought, well, right, let's stop this. So,
do you have to go around with the colonel? I
mean, yes, and when you want manoeuvres, you're with him all the time, the manoeuvres. You know, I guess you wanted to, if you wanted to, I mean, if there was a company half a mile over that way, he said he'll blow C Company call and the officers, C Company call officers, and they would know a CO would want them. Yeah, you went around with him, yes.
What, that was Hal Hastad?
Colonel Hastad, yes.
How did you get on with him? What did you think of him?
Well, he was a great fellow. Jock Aston, I thought, was a smashing fella. He tread. By God, he was a good officer. It was when he went to Khartoum. He was very good. Very good.
What made him so good?
He didn't hold so many CO's parades. He gave us more leisure time. It was more sports. It was more fun. Because we were more or less, the battalion had been out there about 21 years. There was, so it was easy enough to come home, you see. It was the he's an off period, as you might say. He was very good to us.
Was he generally popular?
Yes, very. It was a tragedy when he did what he did to himself. Couldn't, I think he had, was an illness, he had cancer. And he committed suicide, he shot himself. Whether that's right, I don't know.
How did he treat you as his bugler?
I didn't. Although as his bugler, he didn't come into contact with the great lads. Not a great lad. Yes, he would always say, when he went up there, you'd salute him, of course, and he would say, "Good morning, bugler." Or, "Good morning." Not so much as you. If he wanted to blow a call, he'd say, "Bugler, sound so and so." He didn't see a great lot of him, although you were his bugler. No.
Now, you mentioned Bombay. You moved to Bombay. Do you remember which year you moved there?
Yeah, it was 1936. Back end of 1936. Yeah, 36.
And how did that differ from your previous station?
It differed the world. It was great. It was on the seafront. Embarrassed on the seafront. And it was just a nice walk into the city. It was a nice soldier's home. Just 10 minutes walk out of the barracks. And then we used to go to, there was a place called Breach Candy where we went once every Thursday with a lovely big swimming pool thing, there it was. And there was a, what was the name of the sea? Breach Candy. We used to go to Breach Candy. That was a nice place to go to for on the beach swimming. It was a lovely station with Bombay.
You preferred it there then?
No, to Barrackpore. Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Was while you were there, I think there was some civilian unrest. Could you tell me about that?
No, there was, yes. Well, I don't think I'm going to tell you much about this, because, not that I don't want to, I can't remember much about it. There was some civilian unrest, riots that were, they weren't on a very big scale, I don't think, but however big they were, the military were always called out. And that was part of our training. Riot training was part of your training abroad. It was the major part of your training, rioting, because after all, that's what you were there for. And we were called out a few times. And
what were you trained to do? And what was the training like for it?
Well, you can imagine a mob in where it might be the street or wherever it might be. And you arrived in your army wagons. You all jumped out your wagons with your rifle. And then once they saw you, they said, quieting down. They just dispersed. No, sorry, I can't. I'm telling you much about that. We were called out a few times. I remember one day we were called out 3 times in one day. Just got back, and the bugler went again, and the guard bugler, the alarm bell arms, and we went again down to Bombay. It was only in Bombay. It wasn't in. We didn't have any trouble when we were in Calcutta or Barrackpore, just in Bombay. And they didn't last long, I don't think. I can't remember.
There weren't any serious riots?
No, it wasn't. Not like it here now, like these things that's happening in.
Did they throw things at you?
I don't think it even got as far. We were told if it looked like getting out of hand, we were told, the officers or the seniors, were fired shots over the heads, warning shots, you know. That's where the we were taught, it was fire warning shots. And if they got, if then they got serious, they only erupted after the warning shot, then I suppose we'd fire on them and fire to kill or maim or whatever.
But that never happened.
It never happened. No.
Would you? How would you have felt about that?
Felt having to shoot them. Well, how does anybody feel about shooting anybody? You don't relish that, do you? You know, I mean, that in wartime maybe yes, but not. Nice, but if they shot at you, you shoot back, I suppose. It's simple as that.